Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I'm back. Don't worry, I hadn't really gone anywhere. We now have power, so that's all good.
Mm-hmm.
So we're 30 seconds until we go live, and then all will be fine. So great. Good.
Terrific.
Excellent.
I thought she just counted us down.
No, I just heard the jingle.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. I think you did.
Welcome to the crazy world of Kokora, ladies and gentlemen.
Indeed, she did, didn't she? Oh, my goodness me. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to show number 169. After that rather bizarre start, my apologies for that. So we normally welcome our guests after the jingle, but while the jingle was playing, I was actually plugging my laptop in under my desk. So that was a very professional start. But thank you both to Charisse and David for not being fazed by that rather unprofessional beginning to the show. So my apologies. So I am our host for today's show, and today we're going to be talking. I've got two guests with me, as I've just mentioned, Charisse McCrory and David Firth. And we're going to be having a sort of 30 minutes of provocative debate, I think is probably fair to say. And I'm going to be asking, and they're going to be asking really, for our listeners to stop and think a little bit harder about what we really mean by engagement, and discover what beyond engagement might look like. I'm Jo. I'm MD and founder of Woodread, and we work with clients to help them use their brands to engage their employee audiences and to help to create internal cultures. So David and Charisse are both from the Kokora project, and I'm going to ask them in a moment to tell me a little bit about what that is. But before we do that, Charisse, can I ask you first just to give us a little bit of background on yourself, please?
Absolutely, Jo. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. So for my whole life, Jo, I've been a change agent, and I didn't even really have the words for that before now. But as I look back on my life, I realize that most of my life has been spent developing alongside other people. And also, most of the time, I was called a job hopper by my family because I would get bored in a certain capacity, and then I would jump ship and go on to another. And now I see in the last 10 years with my coaching and consulting practice, all of that has come together to prepare me so well for this moment in time when David and I have chosen to create a community for change agents. So that's a little bit about me.
Okay. And David, how about you?
So, hi, everybody. I am a consultant, and I usually just say consultant in everything to do with the human side of organizations. Although, you know, the terms are change management, organizational development, coaching, and so on. And I'm also a writer. I'm an author of many books. And the first one, Jo, is called How to Make Work Fun, which poked fun at the fact that we're not always in control. So I thought the start of the interview was very appropriate to that.
I'm going to pretend that I do entirely, of course. It was entirely planned.
Yes, that's right. The point is we're still laughing. That's the point.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're, and I think you had a rather an interesting background before you got into consultancy too, didn't you, David?
Well, yeah, it was a very interesting background. It was very great, actually. I loved it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, at university, I did English language and literature, which for my career advisor at high school apparently gave me a career of nothing except being a librarian, and I didn't want to do that. So, yeah, I set up with a friend and partner of mine at university, I set up a theatre company called the Lords of Misrule. So, yeah, the first 6 years of my adult life, I was doing everything to do with that small, you know, company. I was writing, directing, playing the parts, driving the van, you know, it was great. Happy days.
Excellent. Yeah, no, actually, it seems to be, I had a guest on the show about 2 or 3 weeks ago who'd actually come down a similar path, actually, which is rather intriguing. So I don't know what it is about the theatre that seems to push people that way. But anyway, great. Okay, so can you tell us then the Kokora project? An intriguing sound. sounding name. What does it mean? What is it? Where you know, what's it all about? That's something you should enlighten us on, baby.
Yeah, so just quickly a couple of things about that. I mean, what is the word itself, Kokora, which is a name that we made up from two Latin-derived words that basically mean questioning together, because we believe, you know, in the sort of change agency and coaching background that Charisse has and my consulting practice that I've had all these years, you know, one of the things that we found to be true everywhere is that people go in the directions of the questions that they ask themselves. And so change is partly about discovering new questions, bigger questions, better questions, and the results coming out of those bigger questions. So Kokora means questioning together. You know, the sort of history is that, you know, both, I think it's both a personal drive and ambition of Charisse and I. We got to pretty much the same time in our own careers, which was, this is great, but what's the, you know, what's the biggest possible impact we might have in the world whilst we're still here? With whatever gifts and talents we've been given, what's the biggest possible impact? And so this was a deliberate attempt to bring whatever we'd learned about engagement and large-scale change out of largely commercial organizations, which both of us had sort of consulted and coached to over the years, and more now into communities, school districts, hospital systems, and so on and so forth. So it's wherever leaders need to deepen and widen the quality of engagement with their citizens or members or employees or customers. That's what Kokora is helping to do.
Right, right. And with its own unique methodology and approach.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's, you know, there are at the heart of Kokora, there are some, for example, large-scale meeting methodologies, which people on this call will have heard of, like World Cafe, Open Space, you know, those are at the heart of it. But then we've also brought all the other things from our coaching and consulting practice that have worked over the years and sort of weave them into this new thing called the Kokora process.
Right. Right. Okay. So it's interesting. I mean, your approach is actually bigger than just engagement of employees within an organisation, engagement of those employees to their job and their work and the organisation they work for. So it's broader than that, as you say. It's taking it out to communities and schools and so on and so forth. So, but obviously our audience and our people in terms of the show are most interested in looking at things from the employee engagement perspective. But I think it's about, from your point of view, you're talking about transferable methodologies and transferable definitions, aren't you, really? So you're sort of saying, well, what the challenging question of what do we mean by engagement is equally applicable, in, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, you know, what works in one system, and whether that's a, you know, school district or a commercial organization, what works in one is going to work in the other. What doesn't work in one is not going to work in the other either, because, you know, no matter what we label these things, they're all collectives of human beings trying to make stuff happen together. So, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about what we mean by engagement. And I think you have a term, don't you, a phrase which you use, which is beyond engagement, and wondering, we need to spend some time thinking about what that might look like. So perhaps if we can kick off by just talking to us a little bit about what your philosophy is at the Kokora Project, and what on earth is beyond engagement? What does that actually mean?
Sure, yeah, and I'll go first again, and then I'm going to pass over to Charisse because I've been talking way too much. But I mean, one way of answering that question is, well, surely there's a beyond everything. You know, when back in the theatre days, Alan, my business partner, and I used to have an Amstrad computer. Now, if I was still working with an Amstrad computer and doing a really, you know, trying my very best to make it work, you'd say, hang on, David, there's something beyond Amstrad. You know, we've moved on a little. And so part of our inquiry is, this is absolutely not about making anything that anybody has done in the past wrong or bad, but what is the next level, you know? And again, I'd come back to, I started with talking about my first book in How to Make Work Fun, which was 1996. I mean, back then, I mean, I'd like to think we've moved on an awful lot. Now, most of the time we can have a conversation where we say, no, we expect our work to have a good measure of enjoyment and meaning and purpose, as well as it paying the bills. Back in 1996, it was a pretty way out idea, you know?
Yes.
And so I suppose I and certainly Charisse as well are just very curious about, it's great that we're doing what we're doing, no harm, no foul, but what could be, What could be the next level? What's beyond this?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And, Sheree, and we're committed to inviting conversations beyond the default dialogue that's happening already. And that's kind of the beyond engagement piece for us. Because we know that people don't often talk about the things that really matter. Even if there is a push-down engagement initiative going on at a company or at an organization, we're not convinced yet that the right conversations are happening that would create sustainable change. So this is for us about not being heard so much as it is about developing that muscle of collective agency, which when people are actively engaged and passionate about their work and they're having the right conversations together, we believe that's like the place to go beyond what's being taught and promoted and pushed down through organizations today.
Okay, so you're in the sort of blurb for the show, we talked about the fact that you think there are only these two levels of engagement. There's engagement and there's beyond engagement, which is the more challenging debate. Yes, in your view,
yeah.
that's the place where people haven't really ventured, and you want to challenge them to take that journey and start thinking about what that might mean, and really that those are the only two things that matter. Is that right?
Well, I think from the place of trying to raise us all up to whatever the next level is beyond engagement, you know, we are being deliberately provocative here. And, you know, one of the things that we care about a lot in Kokora is language. Language is a way of creating change. And the word engagement, this is me going back to my English language and literature days, you know, the word engagement is at the heart of it, gage, G-A-G-E, which is an old English word, which means promise or bond. I was just thinking about this earlier on. Do we still get engaged to be married, or do we just get married nowadays? I don't know. But you know, when we say to our prospective spouse, "Will you marry me?" That is an invitation into an engagement, and then the person says yes or no or whatever. But yeah, if it's yes, you are then in a promise. So engagement for us has this meaning of being in a promise. And for us, there are no shades of being in a promise. So from that perspective, the whole idea of low levels of engagement makes no sense. It makes sense if we mean engagement really means satisfaction, or engagement really means happiness. But I don't think that's taking us far enough. I don't think it's challenging anybody to have the word engagement really mean satisfaction or happiness. And I think we're at the point of discovering what could we create if actually engagement meant promise.
Yes. I suppose it's a little bit like that old saying, isn't it, that you can't be a little bit pregnant.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Interesting. And of course, talking about engagement, as we're engaged to be married, it used to be used to be criminal offence or civil offence of being a breach of promise. People used to get sued, didn't they, for breach of promise?
Well,
they backed out of the marriage that they were supposed to be going to have. So okay, now I can see that. So you really there are no shades of grey. You either are or you aren't. But the beyond it is where perhaps some of the more interesting and groundbreaking thinking can be happening.
Exactly right. Okay. And we, you know, Sheree and I like to think that we have some answers to that. But what we're inviting everybody into is a discussion about if we decided to have engagement mean what it originally meant, which means promise, what would that look like? What would that sound like? And for us, you know, you mentioned the two levels. You know, the first level for me is the level of the stance of ownership, basically.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that I can take, as an employee, wherever I am in the organization, I can take ownership of this work and the impact it has on others. And if I am responsible for this part of, for example, of my factory and it's producing waste, then the fact that I am allowing that waste to happen or not helping to solve that problem has a direct impact on my probability of being employed in this organization, because too much waste is going to make the organization unsustainable. You know, so that's about that for us is a great a partnering conversation about ownership.
Yeah, interesting. So do you see the promise as being a two-way street then?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's you know, let's be provocative again here. You know, when we, now let me look at it from this perspective. My wife doesn't give me a feedback form.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't she?
She doesn't take it. She doesn't. No, I'm thinking. You know, we don't have a survey every year about how we, you know, how we do. You know, the, yeah. And really, I think where we've got to with engagement too much, we've gone too far into the idea of, if my boss were a better boss, I would be more engaged. And that's a bit like saying, if my wife were a better wife, this would be a better marriage. And
yeah.
if she could, maybe we could send her on one more wife program. And,
yeah.
and then it's nonsense. It's
yeah.
absolutely nonsense
yeah.
to talk about marriage like that. But
yeah.
I suggest that too often we get into that way of thinking in the organisation.
Yeah, no, that's very true. So how, so Charisse, how do organisations go about improving engagement then, if getting people onto that engagement place and getting them to beyond engagement? How do they or how should they go about it in your view?
Well, you know, Joe, I think it really comes down to the quality of the conversations that people are having together. And it's really comforting, I think, if you're an employee and you can blame everything on your boss, right? Because then you have no responsibility. There's nothing left for you to do. You can become this, you know, disengaged victim thinking nothing's going to change until my boss changes. The next level is for the responsibility to lie within all relationships and all people. So the collective agency. And I think what David and I are saying is that the next level, yes, there is disengagement. We all know that. And the next level to create something different would be to be willing to have those conversations together without knowing the answer in advance. One of the premises of open space is that, you know, people come to the table not knowing the answer to a very big question that everyone is involved passionately with in some way. And I think if we approached the workplace like that, where we realize that lots of people have perspectives that are valuable for solving some of the biggest problems, and people get excited when they feel like they're part of it, and when they know that their voice is not only heard, but there's some action that they can take alongside that, and they do have a.
And do you tend to facilitate that? In your view, do you make that happen through physically getting people together, or do you have other ways of getting people to start answering those questions?
Yeah, Joe, I can give you an example. So recently I facilitated a group of beautiful women who came together with the purpose of creating deeper connections. And these women showed up without any real idea what was actually going to happen. Bless them. They trusted the organizer of the event, and some of them knew me, so they came. And what happened, Joe, was nothing short of magical. And all I really did as facilitator was pose really great questions. And then I shut up, which I think is one of the most provocative things a leader can do. They, for a minute, you know, those folks were wondering if I was going to teach them something or if I was going to direct them somewhere. And instead, I just asked a big question and backed away. And what happened was they realized they have some pretty beautiful answers inside them that came to life because there was space and time and an invitation to come together and actually get deeper with conversations. And at the end of the day, that group of people were moved and changed forever because they had never experienced being listened to in that way.
Right, right. Okay, so taking a different stance really by not offering answers, but actually offering questions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's,
yes.
Because we do believe that our life goes in the direction of our questions, and we also, the provocative stance is that we're not asking big enough questions, that we're that really is our job next, is to really get to what are the bigger and better questions, and that's where, as the answers emerge, they come from the collective, not from just the leader. And for me, that's such a great thing for the leader, because it takes the responsibility from them and allows them to lean into the gifts and talents that the team brings.
Okay, so let's be provocative and say, do you think then that is there a question that needs to be asked, which is when was the last time you thought about employee engagement in some in a different way?
Yes. Sure. Yeah. To which I'd say, I don't really think we've changed thinking about engagement since the word engagement came into the consciousness of organizations. And I'm old enough to remember when it wasn't in organizations, and now it is. And again, this is from the place of, if I was still using my Amstrad, you would rightly say, David, move on, move up. Yeah, rise up to the next level of using a computer. You know, so too. It's not about making anybody wrong about what we're doing with engagement now. Clearly, it is a lot better that we have more aware leaders and managers in organizations. But we're still within the context of my manager is supposed to give me sense of direction and purpose and motivation, this, that, the other. And we'd say, I think we're coming towards the end of that. You know, we have a saying in the Kokora project, which is about, you know, we need to break our addiction to looking to the front of the room. And the front of the room is where the people stand up and say, I have the answer. Follow me, vote for me, trust me, everything's going to be all right. And I think all of us on both sides of the Atlantic now would say we're getting a lot of examples out now in the collective consciousness where that idea is getting very scary. You
know? Yes.
And from both sides. One is it's clear that they can't have all the answers. It's not just about being nicer by asking more questions rather than giving answers. It's what we are provoking managers and leaders to do is actually come to the realization they don't have all the answers. And to pretend they do to create a sort of more, a higher level of satisfaction and get me a better score on the feedback survey, it actually dampens people's ability to come up and in the way that Charisse facilitated those people say, here's my idea. I'm behind it. I'm prepared to commit to this.
So if we, I mean, clearly the role of the leader or manager is an important one, but it's not, you're saying it's by no means the only answer, and it's not the answer. What else do we need to be doing, Charisse? If we're saying, well, it's not just the role of the leader to drive the engagement and deliver on promises, what else should organizations be thinking about doing in your view?
So I think the leader's role as we emerge into this new era of leadership, new thinking and new leadership, I think the leader's role is really to hold the space for the answers to emerge, to make it safe for people to say what they mean and to not just talk about how much they value the perspectives and opinions of the people, but to actually value it and to take some action because of what they heard and for them to lead with the knowledge that their people are going to have the answers. And you know, I think we do a lot of this already, Joe. I don't think this is rocket science. I think there's been a missing level of permission for leaders to really lean in to the collective in order to solve some of the biggest problems. You've got board of directors who are, you know, who are creating a lot of responsibility and delegation and handoffs of responsibilities to these leaders, and they have to say something back. And so I think the next level for us is just to say, all right, so we, you know, it's our job to bring the right people in so that we can have the right conversations, and let's talk about the things that we haven't been willing to talk about.
And take action on them. Yeah.
Right.
Not just talk, because that's,
exactly.
You know,
although it's funny, David and I have this joke between us, Joe. Sometimes people say, you know, just talk.
Struggling to hear you, but I think you guys can probably still hear each other, so that's all fine. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Or maybe not.
So really, giving people the opportunity to let. Are an act on them.
Yeah, and Joe, you were breaking up a bit there, so I didn't hear the whole question, but just to build on, I think what your question was, and certainly what Charisse was saying, you know, one thing we'd ask people who are curious about this to look at is the next time they do any sort of offsite, particularly sort of a larger group conference, you know, how much of the design are they already in the place of strengthening the front of the room So they'll have speakers, they'll have guest speakers, the motivational speakers, they'll have the CEO doing their bit, the FD doing their bit, and then there'll be some sort of, you know, breakout groups, whatever, you know, whatever. And all of that time, I would wager, in most of the cases, will be detailed down to the last minute. So the possibility of anything coming as a surprise has been almost like erased from that sort of gathering. The possibility of any sort of truly innovative conversation has been eliminated. And the other thing is that most of the time, the people in the organization spend looking to the front of the room, but at the back of their colleagues' heads. You know, and so ours is about what if you were to completely shift that design and turn people to one another and bring a question you genuinely don't know the answer to that's going to affect everybody in the organization, and let people come up with ideas and let people propose actions and let people volunteer with the leaders to take the actions forward beyond the conference. You know, we think that would be a truly effective use of engagement.
Okay.
I was just wondering if you're still there, Joe.
We are.
I'm sure you put up.
It's a great technology day.
Yeah. And,
we,
and
love it, we hate it. We love it when it works.
Oh, I think we're back. Are we back? Are we all back?
Yes,
we're back.
Excellent.
Quick answer the question.
Right, we've got 3 minutes. 3 minutes to go, and hope I'll say it really, really quickly. So, what we call the four.
Yes.
Is the whole thing about employee voice. So it seems to me that what you've been talking about. Really lots of you. Listening.
Yeah, and again, Joe, you're cutting out there, so I know that you're asking about the four enablers, which I love, by the way, and the only one I would challenge people to go further on is this idea of giving people voice. You know, if you want to be depressed by the future of humanity, log onto a site like CNN.com or even BBC.co.uk and look at the discussion threads. You know, people, your hope in the future of humanity will drain away rapidly when you look at that, because that's a result of giving people a voice. When we stop at the idea of if we're allowing people to share their opinions, and that's a good thing, we are really not going as far as we possibly could. So I'd say, yeah, ask me my opinion, but then ask me what I'm going to do about it, and give me the space to create a project, to create an initiative, to take it forward with others in the organization and measure the value. It's, yeah, so that's something I'm very passionate about, as you can tell.
Indeed. So can I just conclude, because we've literally got a couple of minutes left. Cherise, first of all, what one thing you would like our listeners to take away from this in terms of what they're thinking and what they should go away and challenge themselves?
One thing would be just to know that there is another way, and to start to begin asking bigger and better questions and actually leaving space for the answers to come from the collective. And instead of bringing pizza into the factory or having an open door policy, which are, you know, in the right direction to get people together, have them work on bigger and better things and have them be together shoulder to shoulder instead of, as David said earlier, looking at the back of each other's heads. Have them get in a circle and create the space for problem solving, creative problem solving.
Excellent. And David, have you got anything to add to that before we wrap things up today?
Yeah, I think just one thing I'd add into that is just going back to that idea of engagement as commitment and engagement as promise. In addition to everything else we've said and could have said, I'd ask every manager, every leader on this call to say, to reassert, what is their promise as a leader in this organization? What is their commitment? What is their gage, as we said in old English? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And how are they going to keep that?
Yes, exactly right, which brings us to the integrity thing, yeah, because the commitment is the beginning of everything, and commitment is a creative act. You know, promise makes a marriage, promise makes change, and it starts always with us, and so that's one thing I just ask managers to look at, what's your commitment?
Excellent. Thank you both. We've come to the end of our half an hour. It always flies by. I apologise for the technical issues, my issues at the beginning and the technical issues towards the end. David and Cherise, thank you very much for joining us today, and we look forward to hearing how things progress in coming months. Thank you both very much, and thank you everybody for listening.
Thank you, Jo.
Thank you, Jo. All the best.
It's been a pleasure having you. Thank you.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.